Okay, no, that's not the way I feel. Okay. We have told that the amendment was introduced among other things to deal with issues of the checks appointed. And the committee, and I know any part of South Africa will be concerned with the range of tax avoidance that to an extent is, as much as it's not illegal, but highly immoral, denying us an opportunity to create a solid revenue base, the revenue that we need, of course, to drive our development agenda. Now, all of a sudden, there is this about change because of the permission that all mutual. Let's get to know how is this going back to the July amendment going to address that issue that was put up additionally. That's my first point, also. And on the assistance presentation, when reading through one of the presentation copies, because I think I presented two copies to the committee. There is something that you say about the provident bank amortization categorization, which might have an administrative challenge, more especially when we look at the enforcement side of it. Well, that's something else. My specific question on this area, because I'm trying to establish, maybe tapping into your expertise. In your case, what is it, or maybe what will be the impact of separating harmonization of tax to provident fund annualization? I haven't tapped into a technical know-how as to what will be the impact. Can we do the two separately? Because I know there's an argument that you check as a way of ensuring that there is compliance in terms of administration. But what I wanted to check with yourself, if we, as an example, as a committee, we decide to take the two separate. Let's say we introduce a tax harmonization amendment now, and let's at a later stage focus on the provident fund administration. How does this impact on the system, your system that you are claiming that it's ready, I mean, to kick in at an appropriate time? What's your advice? I mean, is it practical? Is it possible? Is it suitable for us to do the two separately? Thank you.
The fee or is the fee? Yeah, we'll deal with it later. We just want to finish this matter. Of the own mutual concerns, then we can register that question. Yes. Okay, on the matter of own mutual and their representation specifically, this is a separate issue. What do members feel? Do you want to say something? This is your sort of area.
Mr. Chairman, you're encouraging me to say something. Thank you. Yeah.
Where? Party is really outside. The meeting wasn't chaired by the subcommittee, right? As far as I know, it was not chaired down that day. Which is clearly executive and a major private company come to some deal, and we just therefore agree. No, we must have our own view as Parliament. So what is Parliament, what's the Parliamentary Committee view?
Chairman, our view would be that the issue of the tax avoidance was dealt with in the initial amendment in July, and that the issue is being dealt with, and it happens to be being dealt with to the satisfaction of a single player in the industry, and that's good. We like it if everyone agrees. That's my understanding, and perhaps I'm wrong, and perhaps Noma can confirm that. And if that is the case, then that's fine by.
She needs more time to look at it. That's very reasonable. We just got it in the East. You can't expect this Parliament to just agree. Then we must know what we're agreeing to. You can have time. We're not voting now. We just need to signal what our interim view is. Okay? We're just signaling this need to take a no decision, right? We're signaling what our interim view is. And I think the question there is exactly what went through my mind, but else seems to partly answer it, right? So basically, unless there are any other comments from members, Atanji will come back with her views by tomorrow morning or so. Can we have Brandon?
Okay, just to clarify, it's only the 30C1F that's going back to the July submission. And from my understanding, is to avoid the unintended consequence of classifying a reinsurance contract differently to an insurance contract. Okay, on that basis, sounds reasonable.
Okay. Can we go back to the... Do you want to give them the...
if I may briefly on the question of whether the anti-avoidance goals of the provision will be achieved. The 27th July version is broader than the proposed amendment to the amendment. So if you go back to the 27th July, it will prevent more than the amendment to the amendment would.
You know that the earlier one is more effective.
Right. It's arguably penally effective, but it treats everybody equally badly.
Okay. So why the first place you change it?
Yeah. Chair, let me say, this is firstly not a new provision. It was dealt with, and the experts at the back will deal with it, but it was dealt with a few years ago. It's related, and I'm going to now not get into detail, okay? That Company A had a set of policies which drastically avoided taxes, okay? And a certain approach was taken in the deadlines, okay? Company B had a different version which was a bit more conservative and paying a capital gains rate, not the full rate. And so when... As you know, with tax policy, as you deal with tax avoidance, we come up with a clause to close things off. Now, the problem that we face is when you then close that loop, because remember, tax avoidance by definition is legal. Okay. How much time do you give the affected party time to adjust? Okay. So, when we came into 2015, the law is already there. What was seen to be then just a small technical correction was made, okay? And that led to an impact that we didn't foresee on Company B, okay? So Company B came and certainly put a pretty convincing case forward and about the time needed to adjust and so on. And so, you know, a further amendment then was made to the amendment. I just got it wrong slightly earlier. So, that's where I want France and Youngers come in. So you really had two companies with slightly different policies being impacted, and one spell that you gave in the initial case when you dealt with Company A, they had a longer time to adjust. We also need more time to adjust. In the end, what we were able to do, and right here, I mean, when we look at this issue, because the meeting that we had was just not with the Treasury. We have SARS there, we have, we also have Mr. André van Heerden here from the FSB, because some of the issues were related to SAM, and that's what the meeting was last week. This issue then sort of also came out of the blue, and it came quite late to us. And of course, at the time, you don't know what the impact is, and you actually got to explore. And what happened is once we made the amendment last week, of course, we then got a counter proposal. So then you had to get the companies separately, obviously. So we looked into the matter, and in this case, we reverted back to the original, but with a slightly later date. But I don't think the date makes a big difference. We believe we keep it to the 1st of January. But let Younger or Frank provide the detail.
Thank you, Chair. I don't think there's a lot more to be said on this. Very briefly, what you had was a situation where we thought we had to close down the particular avoidance structure, but because of the play on the label, that was being argued. The argument was, well, because we have a slightly different label on what we're doing, your original amendment doesn't catch us. So the position then was the technical correction that Mona suggests, which is what went in earlier, to say, no, actually it does catch you. The argument that was then made was, well, that's unfair because it catches us for the lifespan of the contract we've entered into, and if we try and unwind, we will be caught up with a capital gains charge, whereas our competitors were unable to unwind tax-free. Now, that was a concern that was the proposed amendment that was put before the committee was trying to address. The problem is by doing that, you effectively lock in a permanent capital gains treatment, which then goes too far the other way. So that's why the discussion between SARS Treasury and the affected parties was very useful to try and discover where's the balance in this particular area. And looking at it, allowing someone to lock in the tax avoidance forever, or at least for the contract that already concluded, seems to be a bridge too far. And in fact, triggering a capital gain, allowing them to lock in the benefit they had so far, and then moving forward on a consistent basis for everyone, seems to be a much more reasonable approach. And that's how we've ended up.
Thank you, Chair. I think it has already been said, and as Mama said, maybe if the effective date doesn't make a difference, it can still stay 1 January. So we are now pulling back the whole amendment is made, and the 27th October proposal, which is on the bill, will stay.
Sandy? I just wanted to ask a question in relation to capital gains. When is triggered? I want us to get more clarity on Section 9C, because I think it explains it explicitly. Can maybe when they respond go to because I think it addresses the issue of contract cancellation of contract between APES and so can.
Sorry, Honourable Member. Section 9C deals with something else that is a return of capital, whether you're an individual or a company, after you've held a share for a period of 3 years. In this scenario, we're dealing with a company which is a long-term insurer, which has entered into a contract of reinsurance with a foreign company, and then whether the amount or the claim trigger capital gains tax or income and origin, which is subject to normal tax. So these are two different streams.
So basically, at this stage, our position now, that we think it's fine what you've now done, the agreement between the two parties, right? Unless something new comes up, Tandy's want some time, and the researcher, Jumasani, do you want to say anything? I want some time to look at it because there are many things we'll pick up. No? Okay, fine. All right, so we're done with that. I was going to take Isara again. Who are the people that came in? Are you far? Can you make your presentation, then we will take David's question to you, I think, so as well, at the same time. Okay, go for it, please.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Committee Members. Thank you for this opportunity to present to you today. My name is Cynthia Lani. I'm a specialist on employee remuneration and benefits with remuneration consultants. I'm an actuary and certified financial planner, and we work on a daily basis on employee package structuring, financial modeling, and the business links of this committee's decision. Today I represent South African Rewards Association, or SARA. SARA is a professional body that promotes, develops, and empowers rewards professionals in South Africa. This includes setting minimum status for the industry and also to create knowledge building, sharing and networking opportunities for our members and those operating in the industry. In response to National Treasury's call for public contact and mediation to reopen in 7 October this year, SARA conducted a survey to request commentary from its members, and a total of 119 responses were received. These responses are made from employee remuneration and benefits specialists within large companies, and more details on the responses we have received were previously provided in our written proposal to National Treasury dated to November. Although there was only a choice between two options in National Treasury's document, a clear statement was also made that Labour as community constituencies at NICLAC had demanded government release of the Social Security Reform Paper to enable more informed debate and decision making. They've argued that retirement reform currently represents a piecemeal approach in the absence of having sight of the proposed design of a social security system. While the majority of our SARA members agreed with the neglect view and opted for a third option, requesting that retirement reform in its entirety should be delayed until the proposed policy document has been released for public comment, and the public has been given an opportunity to make a contribution thereon. It is our understanding from your letter dated 5 November that the Minister has now proposed implementation of the annuitisation of Provident Funds effective 1 March 2016 as initially promulgated in the Succession Laws Amendment Act of 2013 and amended in 2014. This proposal is therefore in line with option 1 in National Treasury Communication. However, based on the feedback from our members, we request the committee to reconsider the proposed implementation effective 1 March 2016, with the main reason being the need to understand the policy decisions underlying retirement reform and the need to consider the policy in its entirety. The further points in support of this would be the changes clearly proposed a change in policy around employee retirement, but more importantly also introduced concepts which are against historical and mathematical wisdom. For example, we urge committees to request National Treasury to share the supporting compensation on how the 330,000 cap was completed. The tipping point analysis on where the 350,000 cap gives a better benefit for our country as a whole, as opposed to clear benefit for affected persons to optimally save for retirement timely, and why this computation was done, which was valid in 2013, has not been inflationary adjusted for 2016. Turning to the matter of annuitization, we understand and agree with the overall policy position being the protection of vulnerable employees. There have, however, been a myriad of legislation already introduced to guarantee this, including the FACE Act, the professionalization of personal financial advisors, the FSB draft regulations, and the increased fit and proper requirements imposed on trustees. We believe these are commendable developments in protecting vulnerable employees, and we respectfully request the basis, which again goes on why compulsory annuitization is required in addition to extensive legislation already introduced in protecting the customer. We therefore support the NEDLAC request for proper sharing of information before consultation may happen. Having set out the concerns of our members in this presentation, it should be noted that our members have also indicated that should a decision be taken to implement the retirement reform at this stage, a clear preference is given to a once-off implementation rather than a staggered approach. We believe that this option would afford the market the opportunity to address any challenges created by the implementation at its own pace. I would like to thank the committee for this opportunity to present to you today and on behalf of our members at SARA, and I request your favorable consideration of our request. Thank you. Well,
thank you very much. Thank you very much, Lynn. We can now discuss CISA and SARA members. The Kosatu, Matthew, with your colleagues. Why are you here, Valentin? Well, apparently there's no workers here, and now workers here. We're going ahead as ministers. We impressed the ministers in doing the administration. But I'm not fast anyway.
Yeah, you put it in a difficult spot, comrades here. At the cross picket line. So my colleague isn't available. We wasn't able to catch a flight from Johannesburg, so I think myself will have to do Kosatu's importation.
No, he
completed his flight. So it's just too much out from Kosatu.
Yeah, you can miss your flight completely, miss your flight, but it's the next flight. The time that you're going to do it.
Yes.
Can
we take you
there? Go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, you put your 15 in 20 minutes. Sure. Okay. That's what I didn't leave. I raised copies. I don't know if I can give it afterwards, copies of our presentation. Okay, I can give it to I think you are Shannon. Okay. Well, anyway, yes, Chair, let me just start then. Please accept my apologies to my colleague who missed his flight.
My name is Matthew Park, from Consultant Parliamentary Office. I think Consultant has struck media in this Treasury and the Minister of Finance on this critical issue of retirement reforms, including the sea level over the past couple of years. I think we're trying to see how best can we address workers' deep concerns around the proposed retirement reforms to find a win-win solution. Consultant plans, as it was about retirement reforms fund conference a few years ago, was that we believe the lack of a comprehensive social security is one of the main problems facing South Africa. And we believe that the need to cover workers through it and also through a national savings fund. We've had a long established position of supporting a comprehensive social security for all. We do recognize this will take a while to implement, but at least we believe that government must prioritize the plight of vulnerable workers first. We do look at the TLAP and the changes that especially has made over the past few years with regards to retirement reform. Which means this is a starting point for engagement. But I think we're also pleading for more time and space to fully go through all the proposals and what are the implications. So I think we also want to raise quite strongly our belief that the engagement and NEDLAC haven't been concluded and they still need to be concluded. I think many of us are aware of the wild speculation out in the media and the public arena around the retirement reform proposals, some correct and some very far from the truth. But as a consequence, our affiliates have been flooded by resignations of workers, feeling that government, to use the kind of incorrect perceptions, will nationalize the retirement savings. We're worried deeply that if we proceed at this pace without getting a full buy-in from different constituencies, there might be even more unnecessary resignations by workers. We had pleaded with workers not to do it, but retirement reform is a very, very emotional and deeply sensitive issue in trading for many years. I think workers believe that others are going to touch the money and they will literally fight to defend it. Our venture has basically been around not imposing a retirement limit on workers' profit funds without an agreement implementation of a comprehensive social security and retirement reform policy. We're pleading for a moratorium on the implementation of the TLAP bill on the preservation of provident funds and members' benefits to allow for proper and genuine negotiation on comprehensive social security and retirement reform.
Yes,
sure. My apologies for that. I think we're also opposed to the usage of consultants, local and foreign, on this process. I think we're also pleading for the private sector to work with us, to assist us in providing leadership and fact on this sensitive matter, as well as to expose unscrupulous individual companies within the sector who exploit workers' fears and vulnerabilities. Sorry for my sub-chairperson. I think, Shen, whilst my sound like a bit of a broken record, so we are quite adamant that we want government to release the comprehensive social security discussion paper. We know it's not being completely finalized, but we've seen it. We've had engagements with the Department of Social Development around it. And we believe it will really go a long way towards addressing the concern out there and helping to make sure that we don't do this in an ad hoc, piecemeal approach, and that we really make sure that all workers are brought on board. Very sensitive process. I think for the Kusatu, provident funds are deferred wage workers, the hard and serving. We don't believe government can just unilaterally intervene. We also believe that business also doesn't have the right to interfere with deferred wages. It must really have the consent of workers. Any changes on this issue must include our workers' mandate and views. And again, that's why we're calling for this to come back to NEDLAC and conclude the engagement there. We have raised these demands at NEDLAC chair over the past year and before. Community, labor, and business agree that government must engage fully. They must table the comprehensive social security discussion paper, so it's discussed simultaneously. And because that process hasn't been completed, hence there's no NEDLAC signed report for Parliament as there would normally be. We were heartened by the AID National General Council resolution recently calling for the release of the discussion paper on comprehensive social security. And again, we would wait for that to happen quickly. We don't believe that Treasury should just rush through this now would rather err on the side of cultural change. You know, there's two propositions together. I think, Chair, for consultants, for workers, and I'm trying not to go too long because of the time constraints, I think that the absence of any existing comprehensive social security system, workers only facing that is really the retirement savings to deal with unemployment, to deal with financial pressures, and of course, we recognize the massive levels of household debt. This often really is workers' own form of defense. The fear of losing access to hard-earned savings has driven thousands of workers to resign to cash in the savings. We believe the way this whole process has been handled by Treasury has unnecessarily exacerbated it. Our position is to reject the seasonal retirement reform, but to call for a holistic discussion with the discussion paper. And of course, I think historically we need to say there's been a long history of the struggle fighting for the right provident funds as opposed to pension funds, and part of this helps spark the 1933 historic strike in Durban. Chair, we do fully support workers being encouraged to save and supported to build the savings, but believe the approach should be to encourage and not to force. We're deeply fearful that any unilateral changes in the rules can see further large-scale resignation and withdrawal, possibly larger than we've seen to date, and this would be an unmitigated disaster for the country. Chair, we do note the options stated in the CLAB proposal released in October, as highlighted in Treasury's press release. But we do plead and request that consultants and workers be given time to engage on it. It should be noted that consultants having a national congress in 2 weeks' time where we'll be able to receive a fresh mandate on this issue. I think we also need more time to understand what is the implications of the proposals in terms of the first delay. Others have already mentioned. We don't think it will be easy to enforce a mandate to contribute. We believe you can make progress with collective bargaining and sector determination, but the forced approach that we share will just backfire upon all of us. I think, Chair, in terms of the way forward, our position is, one, no implementation of the TLAP for workers without their full engagement and consent. Two, that organized labor is requesting, specifically consultants, more time to engage in the matter of retirement reforms, including proposals in the TLAP bill. Such engagements need to happen at NEDLAC with the comprehensive social security discussion paper simultaneously. And I think, Chair, in conclusion, also that we believe that not just Treasury must be there, but the Department of Social Development also has a critical role to play. They must be part of these discussions. And it's really difficult for us when we engage with Treasury. They have one position, and when you engage with the Department of Social Development, they have a different contradicting position. So we really feel that all parties need to come together, be it Parliament, be it NEDLAC, labor, government, business, public development, strategy, and let's see how we can find each other here. We don't think this part will need to take too long. We believe that the discussion paper was released today. We could conclude our engagements by the end of January, but we want the two to go hand in hand together, Chairperson. Hopefully I've captured all the issues, Chair, and it's not taken too long to your time. Thanks, Chairperson.
All your time, I don't know why you're sitting on this. Many of the members didn't even use the unexpected 15 minutes. You could have spoken longer, but I think you've already covered the ground adequately. Just to see if you can use the fly and then we open it up.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Yeah, Chair, I think just starting from CISA, I think they've, from what we can see, certainly. As we've consulted, I think most people involved, either on the administration side or the investment side, appear to say that the other options we put for delay would really be bad options. And depending on 2A, 2B, 2C, they sort of got worse. As you went down the alphabet. I think that the plea, in fact, from most input from that side has been that you should proceed with option one, and just when I look at some of the inputs that have come, certainly that's been the case, and I'm not sure if others who have sent us submissions have actually submitted directly to the committee, but we did make available the submissions from, for example, some of the other labor federations as well, that well, one explicitly supported option one, the other supported option, preferred option two, but certainly verbally indicated that they would not have any objection to option one. I think with respect to the issue from SARA, I must say I haven't heard of SARA. And perhaps we should refer them to our website so they'll see that some of the policies were put in place in from papers that started in 2012. The 350,000 figure is actually not up for amendment at all. It's part legislation, so we didn't get anything from SARA at the time, and I don't recall that. Perhaps would help if you can say who you actually represent and have some names. Because I think that the issue was pretty widespread, and some dealt with old legislation other than just the options that we were considering. I would also like to just say is NEDLAC doesn't have any view, just for the record. The issue in NEDLAC was it doesn't have a view. And yes, we would have all have liked NEDLAC to have a view, but this issue has been bouncing around for a long time and it's not really come to any sort of resolution. So I'm not sure in the SARA submission what more I can really say, but they've asked for example, on what basis we've done the 350,000. I think we dealt with it the last time, that we are dealing with equity. We are dealing, so, you know, if you sort of say representing the top end, you generally feel that of income earners, you generally feel that 350 is perhaps not high enough. On the other end, if you represent the poorer end, obviously the issue is that they don't actually get the benefit of a tax deduction. So I'm not sure why they feel people shouldn't be allowed to get the tax deduction. Yes, there's a issue of annuitization that comes in. And I think we've made the point that where we have a tax deduction, it's there for a purpose. If you don't want a tax deduction, in theory you can do a tax-free saving, you can choose other mechanisms, but if you're going to use the tax deduction, then the expectation is that you should annuitize, and I should say, so that, you know, we don't get accused of not raising these issues, but we do want to deal with the issue of preservation. There are loopholes, but we also understand that we're not going for, even, you know, we will put out a paper certainly on the issue of preservation as we deal with the loophole that there is, that when you resign you can withdraw your money. And frankly, even on the annuitization clause, you can get around it by just resigning 1 month before you retire. Okay. We do need to close those loopholes. But in closing those loopholes, and that's for the future, not being legislated currently, we will certainly consult over that. And really, the idea would be that you can't have a system we accept of 100% preservation. The issue is, if someone loses their job, you allow some withdrawal of funds. Surely the answer is not that you allow 100% withdrawal when people lose their jobs. You first hope they go to UIF. You hope that there's a gradual withdrawal. And obviously if a person really can't get a job, then you sort of allow for full withdrawal. So in fact, in our pretty extensive consultations with the unions, all the federations, in fact, led a lot of consensus. Treasury did start with a harder line on preservation. And by the time we, what was it, 2013, we had a much more nuanced approach. We didn't legislate it. We, in fact, legislated some issues which the unions were actually very happy about. It was all part of the same process. That was, for example, criminalizing that the employers. There were some employers who weren't handing over the contribution of members, and that we changed the Pensions Fund Act to the Financial Services Laws General blah 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 Act, and has actually criminalized that. And in fact, we got a lot of support from the unions. Now, if we did proceed in 2013 with that amendment, just because there wasn't social security reform, then we'd be allowing abuse of workers, okay? So at the same time, we did the 2013 reforms because there was consensus up to that point. It was when the law It was only in 2014, and so just coming back to the Kusatu position. And let me say that, you know, we are trying to find each other with Kusatu. I think that the issue, and we've tried to take some of the concerns into account. We have said that with regard to the approach that no change until the social security reform is not a helpful one, because not only would it have meant that we wouldn't have proceeded in criminalizing employers who didn't hand over the contributions, but in fact our issues and the papers, and I would recommend this for the representative from SARA, we dealt with charges, for example. We dealt with the fact that some of the annuity products perhaps were not appropriate. You know, only insurance companies can do annuities currently. There's a whole range of market conduct practices that we need to deal with. To the extent that we don't make changes as and when we identify them, it's like tax avoidance. The problem then is somebody is benefiting by us not making the change, okay? And certainly I think where we sit, we try and look at the public interest, and if we were not to make a change, by the same token, then is Kusatu or some or SARA saying, for example, that we should allow an unlimited tax deduction to high income taxpayers, because that's the reform we've made. So is that also up for us not to move on, okay? And there's been a lot of abuse there in the sense that it's not abuse, it's tax avoidance, so it's legal. So you can't go and lock somebody up. They are exercising their rights in terms of the law. We don't change the law, we shouldn't be surprised that people do that sort of tax structuring. So with regard to the issue then of the Provident Fund, certainly it's of concern, and I think that we understand the issues. I think that workers, you know, rightly feel strongly about their funds. In fact, when we went out, and thanks to Kusatu, thanks to NACTU, thanks to FEDUSA, we get invited, we meet with their shopkeepers, we would be surprised because people would say, government, we don't want you to touch our money. And we would say, we're not touching your money at all. It's your trustees who are touching your money. We worry whether your trustees are doing good for you, okay? So there are governance issues that we need to deal with on trustees. There are conflicts of interest. There are power relationships. I would fight with the unions to say, when you have those conferences in Mahalisburg where we come and address you, why are the major companies paying for that? So we fight with our regulators in the FSB to say, can you ban all the companies from sponsoring these events? Even paying a cent, because the money that they are using to sponsor is from your money. Okay, it means that your charges are obviously too high. So there's issues like those that come to the fore, and I don't think we would serve anybody's interest if we were to delay on those. In fact, the point made that no change with unless the social security reform is done would be music to the ears of the wrong people, in my view. And what it would mean is some of those reforms will obviously take a long time. And so, yes, retirement reform does need to be done in stages. If you want to call it piecemeal, so be it. But it's still the right thing to do. So coming back to the point on annuitization, I think that our point is, if there's no tax deduction, then there are other products available, obviously, for those who don't want to annuitize. But we do have to link, and if you look at our figures, there are this maybe and Olamo, this come in. There are at least 1.2 million, and I would think even more because your employee contribution is a non-taxable fringe benefit at the moment. If you add that on, I would think, and that's wrong, that even more than 1.2 million would jump into the tax bracket. So every month, workers who get their tax deduction, and I don't see why we should deny workers the tax deduction, that they will certainly get a slightly higher take-home pay on a monthly basis. The issue of annuitization, I should add, we've dealt with the issue of the threshold, and it will take certainly as a low income end, at least, if not 3, 4, 5 years before people even reach that threshold. So what I would submit is, let's continue to engage. I think that we should pass the law because everyone's ready to implement it. But nobody will actually feel that. So if a worker, in fact, even up to year 2, given that we've recognized best advice, all the savings they've had up to 1st March next year, that they will be able to take in a lump sum. Okay. It's the new contributions after 1st March, and if you are under 55, okay, because you're 55, you enjoy that, okay? And let me say, not only do you enjoy your right to get your money in a lump sum, but that, and not just for low-income workers, that applies to many companies that have the provident fund for their managers, so they will also continue to be enjoy that benefit. So if you are under 55, your new contributions from next year will certainly go towards this fund. It's only when that amount reaches, now I get confused, 100 and, well, your total savings is 247,500, okay, that you are then forced to start annuitizing. Now, what I would what I want to appeal to the start to is, look, let's see how it goes. Let's go ahead. If there are difficulties, because for us to go and get a common message, educate people, and if it's a problem, we can review the legislation at that point, if we think there's a case to be made. And for example, say to people, okay, if you want to opt out, then you won't get the tax deduction, you'll have lower pay, but you've got to get people used to go in the right direction. That is what the whole idea of defaults are. The defaults we have currently in our retirement system are the wrong defaults, okay? You leave your work, HR department just pays you your amount. The default regs that we are doing in parallel here with, and we did brief the committee a bit on this, is at the moment if you leave your job, it will be, once the default regs go through, they are actually provided to you in a preservation fund. It's yours, but at least you don't use it up and you still enjoy the tax benefit. It's only when you actually withdraw from the preservation fund that you get hit with the tax. So I believe that some of these problems we can sort out, and I'll just appeal that we continue to work together. I don't know if Rana wants to add on, if there are any other points that came through.
Thank you, Mama. Thanks, Chair. I think I'll try and deal with the issue around the comprehensive social security. So, Chair, we remain committed to release the paper, and that's both departments, Treasury and Social Development, but Chair, and Labour. But Chair, there is a history, and I think it helps to sort of unpack a little bit that history, and I'll try and be brief. So, Chair, the process even predates me, and it is true that it has taken quite a while to try and finalize and come up with the paper. But as I've said the last time, the issues are quite complex in the paper, and that's the reason why it had actually taken such a long time. So we had to get actuaries just to model some of the benefits and the cost implications to the state. And just to give you a feel of the issues, Chair, so you still need to decide if you would prefer to go with a single national fund. And once you cross that hurdle, then you must decide what type of a fund you need. Should it be a DB fund? Should it be a DC fund? And if you offer a DB fund, then you need to be cognizant of the implications around a DB fund. So if you look at what has been happening in Europe, especially after the global financial crisis, and Greece is a good example, how if as a country you have very generous pension benefits which are backed by the state, and economy is not growing that well, and your finances as government end up in a difficult situation, how that can have very negative implications to the very same people you are trying to protect, because then it means you won't be able to meet your commitment. But how you design that national fund is quite critical and can have major implications. So what happened is a lot of work was done running towards 2008. Then you had the global financial crisis. So in a way, we have to step back and say, you know, are there lessons to be learned? And indeed, there were some lessons to pick up. And as I mentioned, Greece and other European countries as examples. But we then had to decide, do we still continue trying to crack all these difficult issues and hold everything in suspense, or do you try and pull out critical reforms which you can immediately attend to on condition that whatever you are doing in terms of those gradual reforms will ultimately be consistent with the overall objective of a comprehensive social security. And as I indicated last week, Chair, and I take the point from COSATU that, you know, some stakeholders haven't seen this paper, so I have the benefit of hindsight in the sense that I have seen the paper and I've been part of the process for a while. So I'm able to assure members and COSATU that what you are seeing being done now in terms of the various reforms, including the taxation laws and amendment reforms, will be consistent with the broader design of a comprehensive social security. And share the point I made a couple of years ago. One is to acknowledge that there are arguably cracks in the current retirement system, but the system is not broken, and I think it's a critical point. So the system is not necessarily broken, but there are cracks which we feel we need to address as soon as possible. And Mumia has touched on those. So it is preservation, they need to annuitize, to simplify the system so that people can understand what they are contributing, what are the likely benefits, and if they are able to contribute more and derive a higher tax and benefit. And we do feel those urgent critical policy issues need to be addressed. And as you have seen, these reforms which have come through. So just to conclude, I do appreciate the concern coming from COSATU and FAR around the comprehensive social security paper. I can try and at least assure you to a large degree that what has been done and what you are seeing done is very much consistent with what you would likely see in the comprehensive social security paper, because you are going to need the current system, even if you end up with a national fund or you decide to piggyback on the current system. Whatever ultimate goal and design feature you end up with, you will still need the current system, and hence it's important to start fixing the current system if it's going to be with us for some time. Thanks, Chair.
Quickly, please.
Thank you, Chair President and Honourable Members. I thought it would be worth emphasising one point on the implications of delay in the changing of the tax deduction and the introduction of the cap. If there are individuals and if there are, let's say, HR managers or tax practitioners who are structuring their package, the delay in the changes to the tax formalisation will benefit them. If there are contributions above $350,000, the longer this is delayed, they can continue to have a higher taxable income. And I think that's worth bearing in mind when we consider these options. I also just wanted to note, from the SARA submission, it just goes through your presentation came very much across that there should be delay in the majority of members think that. In your submission, it does say 42% of your members actually wanted option one, and there are quite a lot of reasons within that submission why they didn't want option one. I just want to indicate that you do have quite a few members who think that would be the best option, and the others who didn't seem to believe that it was you needed a release of the paper. The others thought that there were time and challenges in terms of payroll. We've spoken to a lot of the other payroll associations. The payroll associations are here. A lot of the administrators are very happy with the one March 2016 and they are able to do it. So some of your payrolls might have concerns, but there's a lot of other payrolls that don't have concerns in terms of that timing issue.
Okay, can I conclude by saying, just continue. So I guess what we're saying is there are costs if we do not proceed, as there were costs last year. and a lot of people were upset that we didn't proceed with the reform. But can I say, and I'll end by saying this, there are issues even, as I said, around annuities. So let me just give you an example. That if I work, I would worry, like, what happens if I retire and then I die after 2 years? Does my family get anything? Okay? So those are the kinds of discussions that we have. That say, the first 5 years, if you go through life, then your beneficiaries get something. So it depends on the type of annuity. So there's a lot of discussion that we really need to have. The devil's in the detail. This measure doesn't solve all the problems. And any solution we have is not also a panacea to every other problem. Inevitably, there'll be people, if the dice of life is against them, then it's others who live longer will in a sense benefit from what they contributed. But you want to see how can you even things out a bit so that at least the family benefits and so on. I think the other issue certainly that we mentioned in the note is though we're not dealing, and the minister has made announcements in the previous budget on the issue of universalization of the old age grant. Okay. I think that even in these tough times it may be less expensive, and this is what I want to appeal to Kusatu, and I think certainly we met with them last night as well, is to see what more work can we do, even in the build-up, both in communicating the message, but also in dealing with issues. I know that they are concerned with vulnerable workers, okay? People who work on construction sites, so that it's not you have work today and you don't have work tomorrow. Domestic. How can we deal with those? Should we wait for social security reform? Or is there something that we can do in the meanwhile? The issue of the means test, even if we can't solve get rid of the means test for everybody at this stage, especially given the state of the economy, can we ensure that we don't get perverse outcomes, that if you are contributing to a provident fund, you aren't disqualified from the old age grant? So those are issues that I think further work needs to be done, and we're hoping that the minister can make some of these announcements in the budget, if we can reach agreement before then. So I'd like to put out our hand and say, can we work on these issues? There are lots of issues to work on. So thank you, Chair.
So, members, Pinky, Chandi, Dez, for now, okay.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think maybe I will start by reminding my input from the last week input that I made. Flowing from what Kodachu was saying, today to Treasury. Treasury is at the center of the broader issues around tax reform, pension reform, social security, because even if the Department of Social Development is there, but they still bounce certain things with you. And I think the call for realigning your programs and making sure that everything comes, the ducks are in the row, it's very critical. We hear what you're saying, or Nanu to say, you're central to some of the things that are happening and you can put us at ease around how some of the things will speak to the bigger picture, but I think, and the call I'm making here through you is that you see we're dealing with this amendment now, and there'll be a lull after we have passed on this thing, and these things will come back again next year when we have to attend to this. And the call or the plea I'm making is that as this process unfolds, let's also frustrate the social security thing so that in the next round of engagement, we don't come back to say social security. You remember it was written in inverted commas last week on a recommendation. So it must come out of inverted commas and it must now be something that is happening. So that's the appeal I'm making, because we'll come back with the same stakeholders and they will even say, it's still work in progress. And I don't think that's really how we want to go as this committee. But coming to the issues raised by Kosa Fiche, I think I sort of share the same sentiments with Momo to say. You know, the document speaks of rejecting and rejecting and demanding and demanding. And the document is not saying to us, you see, option one is here, but these are the challenges that at COSATU we are faced with, which we think we are not comfortable with. And we think these are the far-reaching implications of this. And if the majority of unions in COSATU are using preservation funds, what is the implication of this on that, or provident funds and so on and so on, so that we know there are areas where there is synergy, there are areas where there is no synergy, and how do we come closer to each other. But if you come in and reject and reject, I can tell you, Chair, I was a teacher at some point. We find these things of annuities and everything, not knowing some of the things. And later on you start to now understand. And I mean, the system that we come from, I mean, I'm one example that when you talk finance, I can't even understand because of the kind of education I went through. I mean, 1 + 1 = 11 to some of us. You see? Now, when COSATU comes here and it says, I can tell you, if you do this thing, there will be a lot of resignation. I mean, they are the first people who might be worried about it. And I mean, I'm not saying I'm teaching COSATU how to take care of their members, but I will be worried if most of people that belong to our federation, I'm not a member of COSATU, by the way, I'm just saying our, I'm assisting me. Now, and then our people will resign, and then we know the implications of people resigning at the age of 40, and then next time, and then you become a social security person, and all the, I mean, those things, we know. And we know the difficulty of people grappling with the things of pensions and so on. I mean, I can tell you sitting here, I said it last week, even members of parliament have challenges in understanding the pension fund reform and what Senator is proposing, which is coming in their best interest anyway, so that they can start to understand Old Mutual and all other people. I'm talking Old Mutual because they are here. Old Mutual and all other people who are doing all this thing. And Kandi is a member of Old Mutual. So I'm saying, we should, I mean, Kosati must also assess the process so that we know where the interventions are needed, but so that we also know. I mean, you can't have a legislation that is like this and rejected from page 1 to page last. It can be. There are areas where you would think, here at least you are speaking to issues in our interest. And that's the appeal I want to make to COSATU. We want to listen to all stakeholders and reach out to our stakeholders so that as legislators, we also are able to assist our people accordingly, but unfortunately they are not helping. Thank you very much.
Please, I should draw your attention to the fact that it's possible that what you came for you will get, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know, because the committee secretary knows that the return would be to ensure that your entire company and all the people that ensure with it and deal with it vote for the majority. because let's be fair. Let's be fair, Mr. The majority party took this decision. Never mind what a minority party said. So our lawyer will sign the agreement before you pass. Or am I? Don't you need a stable democracy? You need a strong majority party. The economy is very volatile. We need a strong party there that will inspire investor confidence. Not small party.
Why are you assuming that will be a change?
Right.
I'm going to buy you a Coca-Cola when you go out of here. That's all I can afford. I'm not going to repeat what I said on many occasions, it was very clear. But let me start on a lighter note. The former Minister of Finance of Greece, Father Fahis, is now telling his speeches to make money because he made wrong decisions in government, you see. for you to come and speak, you pay $15,000. Let's convert it into South African rand. You see? Huh? Yes. So we don't want to be like Farafakis, you see? And he's clever, he goes and sells his fishes, he leaves the poor on their own because he made them take long decisions. Okay, let me leave Farafakis. Let me come to the Tafis. Momo, the Tafis are not interested in your communication strategy. You are going to disturb their eating. Now, Chair, I want to make a suggestion. We expropriate Momo and Orlando and Yanga suits, we buy them gumboots and overall, we take them to the township, we take what you are saying now, we write it in Zulu, English, African, Setswana, and then we come back. I can sell tents to the recyclers for their flight to go to the township, because that's all we need now. Right? I'm done. I'm not going to come back again. I've been saying this thing. Now, the only issue I picked up today, actuarists are like lawyers. They never agree. You see? Lawyers, they study same institution, same Roman or Dutch law. They go to the court, they say different things. Now, my husband did a lot of statistics, you know, mathematics. He ordered petrol, oil on behalf of South Africa and all kinds of things. I see him getting involved in many books. I avoided that. I was only made to study mathematics for the first time when I studied economics. I don't want to go there again. Now, you see here, something has been said today by actuaries. There is a medical lady here from Sava said something that is not in her document. She says, we should adjust the gaping to be inflationary related. It's a new debate. It was not there before. Because the others are saying, why do you do it at 350? It's opinions. We leave it to them to appeal. Now, that one might be an issue. It might be inflation-related so that they see it in figures. You didn't write figures. Okay, they thought they will blind us if they put them for us, the figures. But they won't blind it, actually. So give them the figures. How are they inflation-related? You put them nicely up and so on. And then we can come back. And I said to you, on concern, I can't do it here. The other thing that you want to say. But there are certain things that you consult, but there are certain things to take decisions. Because the future is the keys. They cannot erase the wrong decisions of Farafakis personalities who have taken those wrong decisions. I don't want to say a lot of stuff today. I picked only that one. Then let's get left in the garden. I want to go to my office. I'm hungry. There's no tea. There's nothing. Please, my.
The right to strike. Two are marching in the township for the right to strike. Now bear with it.
There's a very one question to you about the separation of harmonization and tradition. Remember that.
Yeah, I think anyone can also respond to that question. Yeah, my follow-up question, or maybe my additional question. You know, I'm a bit worried of the fact that since 2008, the discussion around the proposals on social security has been going on. And in 2013, we said, let's not implement the deferred method for fair engagement in network. And now there's also a federal court for this whole process to be deferred again. And the confidence of Qatar is quite encouraging, or quite interesting, because they say they are sure that by 2016 January, this matter can be concluded. Now, I don't know what's the basis of that confidence, because in my case, the matter, this matter, I mean, all stakeholders failed to resolve on this matter since 2013. Now, I'm not sure what will be the other new developments or reasons to make them finalize it so quickly. Now, I'm very much disturbed, because in my case, if you look into the details of some of these, the required reforms, the beneficiaries here are our ordinary people. Low-income earners who are exposed to very, very
Because I remember at some stage we went through a study that revealed that regular fees that are charged on some of these retirement funds, they rose close to 40% of what should be the return to our people, or to, to fund members. So it tells you that some of the fees that are being charged definitely need to be looked at. And this reform, in my case, we're going to assist us to address some of these things. And also the reforms, I mean, go for us to ensure that we also introduce our members, as correctly cited by one of the speakers, to test discussions. That will allow them to have more, at least, disposable income as compared to what they have now. And definitely this will encourage them to be contributors, of course, to to the economy. What really makes me not happy is exactly what was said, because the more we delay, Momo was correct, the more we delay these changes. There is plenty of who is to be blamed for the delay. But the more we delay these changes, is the more we are caught the wrong people an opportunity, I mean, to meet the system. You know? Like now, I mean, look at this thing of not harmonizing taxation. Definitely, there are people who, more especially those high income earners, who continue to structure this provident fund. I mean, to do what to avoid pay tax. And by so doing, what has correctly cited is their own. Nothing wrong with avoidance. But morally, for some people use it, I mean, to deprive the country the necessary and required revenue. So there are so many things that you are missing in the process. There are so many opportunities that are being missed in the process. The more you defer, the more I mean, you miss on this opportunity. But I'm equally not on, because I think I can, well, without maybe saying this is my party's view, I mean, this is my personal view. Netflix at times seems to be used to just delay something. Because now it says this matter must go back to Netflix. And then it goes to Netflix, it becomes another protected process. At the expense of other development authorities, you know. So I'm very, very worried if that is how NECTEC is being used. Now, sir, I'm not sure if you allow me to talk to the submission made by National Treasurer. More indicates that, but I'm not yet convinced how is this the moving forward with option one going to allow for further engagement. I'm not yet convinced. Besides that maybe some participants in Netflix might ask you that you are engaging that faith. I mean, already effected changes, now you are engaging us. So I'm not sure how is this going to be done, but also because there's other sensitive things that I really think I'm more worried of, and I know Kota is equally worried of this. You know, there is history, an unfortunate history for that matter, behind any, reforms that are being introduced on Provident Fund. And as a result, we have lost, I mean, some of our key leaders, I mean, to come of our country. I can cite one, I mean, the Comrade Selby Maisa was an NUM leader, and for that matter, he was also in the list, the national list of my party to come to Parliament when all these things happened. Just to show that if some of these things are not properly handled, they might obviously have some intended consequences. Now, I know this is a major concern of Kota, because you know, as Honorable Tobias just indicated, people who are affected, they don't understand this big language that they're using. And this is their money, because to them it's like I'm putting aside my salary. I'm taking 5,000, 10,000 of my monthly income, putting it aside so when I get to my retirement, I'm able to access my money. So in a way, as correctly cited by Kota, this is a deferred income, you know? Now, temporary means that this is specific for your authority. For people who are mainly financially illiterate,
I can tell you it can be a very, very vital exercise. In fact, last time I said jokingly that if we don't handle this thing appropriately, we might have to deal with something that much worse. You know? And we have an opportunity here. We have an opportunity here as to take these decisions. I mean, really to think of something. We can't just try to see if, you know, we are in a vacuum. We are not in a vacuum. We are living here, and we know there is a lot of history behind some of these things, you know. So it would be good for us, I mean, to be very, very concerned, but also to, where necessary, think of measures that can be employed. But I'm not convinced, I can tell you now, I'm not convinced that we have done that consultation. I know that in this consultation, I have meetings of trustee-wise and meeting, but I can tell, I'm not convinced that the message has, I mean, cascaded to the lower level of those who are affected. I'm not. And that's where the problem is. Well, these are the majority of people who are affected. We are dealing here with their country, you know. So I think if we take these positions, let's also be considerate. So maybe let's say, what is this? How are we going to inspire our communication? But also, how are things moving past this option one, acquire as an opportunity to identify this communication, you know. I think that will really be of help. Thank you very much.
Oh, I don't think the DA was a concern. I wanted to raise a concern. Chairman, I'm very grateful for the concern, but I do switch my phone off always to put it on silent. I withdraw, Mr. Chairman, I withdraw. I'm no coward, I'm a gentleman. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the attack and for giving me the opportunity. The question that Mova dealt with for me last week has again been raised by Sarah, and I see also by Keith Engels, the Gallagher Institute of Tax Practitioners. The 359, it is true that it's not an amendment, proposed amendment, it's in the Act already, but it's also equally true that it was decided some years ago, and I'm beginning to feel there should be some kind of inflationary adjustment there. And as the Chair has pointed out to us, it's Parliament who makes these decisions, and so we're now going into an amendment to the bill, and we could include such an amendment. And I'm booking the Royal Week because I'm sure the ANC will support me on this one. And so there you go. So I'm not sure whether you want to comment on that, but I would appreciate some comment as to why we shouldn't. It's really more than why we should at this point of implementation. Mr. Chairman, the South Kensington Chartered Accountants submission has come in now, and it talks about an issue of self-proprietors being deemed as employers. Where partners are. Perhaps some background from whoever in National Treasury can, you know, what are their reaction to that particular concern raised by SACA?
Sorry, just another small comment on the 350,000 cap. Previously, there was no cap. I mean, the pension funds that were 7.5% not capped, and RAs 15% not capped. And these counts, but in the previous system we were talking about, there's no constructive policies to change the recession we're looking at. And the fact is that we need to encourage savings, and we need institutional savings to undertake the projects, which creates employment in the long run. So by capping, we're capping the money available in the retirement space for investing in the economy. So something we've got to look at, if you don't lift the cap, then at least we've got to have inflation increases. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so we start with Asita, then we'll have Sara, and then Kosatu, and the National Trade. Sorry?
Okay, Asita.
you, Honourable Chair. The Honourable Member asked the question whether what the issues would or would not be if the harmonisation of contributions, tax deductibility of contributions to provident funds took place, but the annuitisation of the benefits that are outside the vested portion were to be delayed. And in answer to that question, the steps that would have to be taken from a practical point of view is that the system bills that have provided for the annuitisation option and for the ring fencing of those vested benefits, which will be the amounts built up in provident funds for those under the age of 55 up until 1 March 2016, all of that bill will have to be unbuilt. And our members tell us that unbuilding is more or less the same effort and money as building, because when these kind of big interventions are made, generally the companies will do them together with all of the other systems, or a big chunk of the other systems changes that have to be done at that point in time. And in fact, many of the larger institutions that have numerous systems to deal with will close down, they call it a code freeze, they close down any interventions in their system for a period of time. It's generally between December and January, so that they can get all of the work done, they can test it and make sure that that it rolled out as smoothly as possible once it comes online. Now, to make the undo work, it's not like opening the bonnet of the car and putting your hand in and pulling something out and closing it and all is fine. It's like dismantling the whole engine and putting it together again. So that's the closest analogy that, you know, if one has a very simple system, you probably can just switch on and off. But for these very integrated large systems that most or many of the large institutions have, it is not a simple matter. Payroll administrators that are in the process of setting up all the various changes would potentially have to make changes too. So that would have to be unbuilt. The ring fencing of vested rights would have to be unbuilt. But those are the practical side of it, which do add to cost. But on the other side, there's that communication that will have to be undone. It's that explaining and education to people, which the big concern is the confusion that will be brought about and the lack of trust in the system generally, because once that is all undone, if and when annuitisation does come in, it has to start all over again. And the end of the day is that provident fund members will find themselves not really knowing what's going on. One minute something's happening, the next minute it's not happening, now it's happening again. And all of that confusion doesn't bode well with the system in general. From another perspective, our understanding is the idea of the harmonization of the contributions is a quid pro quo. It's that's what you get if you are going to annuitize. So once you've given the one, the tax deduction, at that point where you want to introduce the harmonization, then we would foresee being back again because now there's nothing in return for the annuitization. Now it's just a perceived stopping me from getting my lump sum, even though it would ultimately be in my interest at the end of the day. And Mo mentioned earlier,
just on this.
Okay, sorry, it's my final point. Momo did mention, and it has been mentioned by others who have spoken, it's the charges in the system. The industry, since there have been extensive consultation papers out in front, in fact, since the State of Financial Sector to Serve South Africa better paper and policy document came out in February 2011, there have been, I think, at least six consultation papers which senior members have consulted with Treasury and made submissions on and discussed. And a big driver to all of this is the drive to bring charges down. And industry accepts, we contest the 40% figure that's been mentioned, but nevertheless we accept that there is a need to bring charges down, and members of the CEF are driving towards that. But many of the issues in the system are structural issues. The complexities make for complex systems and complex interventions. So the members are very anxious to accelerate simplification, which would allow for consolidation, and therefore the economy of scale. You can bring, that's a mechanism that can bring charges down. So that is something that members are very anxious to get going with. There are many interventions that are needed in our system. We acknowledge that. And in fact, this is only a start. MoMA has mentioned some of them. And it's actually going slowly for our members' liking, but we accept that this one needs to tread slowly and carefully. But we feel that to make, to undo what is in the process of being done would be stepping backwards, whereas we have only just started to move forward towards the end goal.
Chair, I'm going to lay my devil's advocate for a change. I want to get where is the trade-off between the implementation of the system and to also address the agitation of the sector. For instance, I know business in exchanges, they will not want to suffer the financial consequence of changing of the systems and because of basic mathematical reasons they want to profit. But what type of incentives? And when we start listening to me, this matter is talking to the national treasurer. What incentives? He did mention earlier that let's put the system to test. If it doesn't fail, we'll change the inflation. Maybe it's not enough. Maybe we should say if the administrators suffer financial costs, there is an incentive that will accommodate. I don't know how. I'm trying to play the devil's advocate here. Because it seems that's the gist in this context. To say, one, the timeline is a challenge. Two, we might suffer financial costs for implementation. Well, we'll address the simplification issue and blah, blah, blah. So there should be a give and take, okay? Chair, if you agree, there should be a give and take to try and have take. So where do we? Because we don't hear it. If they say that if you implement by 1st of March, too early, the systems will not be able to accommodate that, what's our trade-off? Because there's raised other repercussions if you don't implement. And those repercussions are not affecting the administrators, are affecting the benefactors. Right? So we should be providing any form of relief, in a way. I don't know. So that we not seem to be only focusing on changing the policy, but not looking at the practical implications in an event that there is one. Now, a simple suggestion, if it doesn't make sense. Can you say, let's put this to test, if it does not work, we'll revisit. Or else, we put the clause to be accommodative. I don't have, in the current conjuncture, a suggestion that I can make on how to rephrase that. I also don't think we, in terms of the timeline, I don't have clear suggestions, because in numeric terms, I don't know what will be the financial implication if we delay the implementation. Equally, I can't put it to test. It's statements that are affecting. I've not heard figures that have been presented by the sector to say how much it will create as a problem. Can they engage on that on their own? And maybe come to a suggestion to us. Does it make sense?
You want to respond to me now?
Chair, it's not the system that's determining the policy. Remember, the policy has been in place, like Urban has outlined, as many papers and so on. And even if we didn't look at the system's issues, the point is that we've got too many funds in South Africa. Ideally, some people think you need them to go to the extreme and have one. You can go to Australia and so on and have five or six. You still have many private ones over and above. But at a guess, what we've been saying is, we should be aiming for, a maximum of 200, 300, 400 funds, okay? The problem is, the more choice you give members, the more the system needs to differentiate between different things. So if you're giving people a tax break on something and committing, means that in the back office, as you say, at the moment we want to make it easy for the members. So at the back office, they've got to separate different types of funds. It's quite a massive task. And every payroll administrator has their systems, because this is deducted from your monthly payment. Okay. They, you know, and there's different systems that are around, so that's why you see that there's an submission from the PAG and other payroll groups, because we can do what we want to here, but basically if it's not possible to get the system in place, then it's really not possible to implement. Now currently, because we delayed by 1 year, that caused quite a lot of issues, obviously. But, you know, we don't want to use the fact about the systems being the reason. If it's the wrong thing, then yes, we're going to have to look at what to do. I think what we're saying is that, and you, should I answer the other question? So, which is, I think, Der van Rooyen, I think the question he said, would it be bad faith to implement? Okay. The point is, if we were to implement, actually, nothing's going to happen for most people for the next 2-3 years. They're not even going to feel it. And what they'll feel is that every month they're getting more money because the tax deduction operates. Okay. In fact, once the tax deduction operates and you say to them afterwards, do you want to reverse the annuitization and take a lower salary? I think that you'll find the answer is going to be easier. You sort of get to the right answer. Okay. And this is what default theory is about. It's about, yes, you've got to decide what's in the public interest generally the right thing. Okay. People have a right to differ, but put them into the right default at all stages. So this is like a default. It starts to get into the right default. If we find there's a big problem and it comes out, we can still look at it in a year, 2 years, and begin to offer people other options. But people need to understand, look, when they opt out, not only will their salaries go lower because they won't enjoy the tax deduction, but their costs may also go up. And the question that we need to ask is, if you want a situation where you can withdraw your cash at any time, you are actually affecting the many thousands of others who would actually get higher growth because they're prepared to commit that we will put our money, we want it tied up for a longer period. And of course, for those who want short-term products, like the tax-free savings, I mean, when I say that the hard work really starts after this, it doesn't create bad faith, but I think it gets us in the right default. And then we can start looking at the right issues. So the right issues would be, are the annuities that we're looking at appropriate? Okay. Should we not look at the case where someone dies in, say, under 5 years, that beneficiaries are dealt with? Are the annuity products the right sort of product that we considering? Okay. And people start having many more choices. So it creates the grounds to actually get the right conversation. And when I say default theory, almost accepts that 90% of the people will never ever actually engage with these issues and never actually choose another option aside from the default option. And that's why it's important that we get them into the right default. So, whilst we don't want to encourage people to go to what we don't consider the best options, those can be provided with time, there can be enough time for the industry, let's look at the cost and so on. But the fact is, the next 2 to 3 years, for most people, if we as leaders, in a sense, don't go and create scare stories, nothing much is going to happen. In fact, what we want to do then, I think, and I think, again, Honorable Van Rooyen, I think, has done the right thing. At the moment, we're all talking as the leaderships are talking, leaders in government, leaders in unions. We haven't really taken these issues to the ground. And that's where the rumor mill operates, and that's where we actually got to go. I think that even for Kusatu, they can say that they tried, but what will happen actually in the next 2-3 years, nothing will happen, except that they'll get a higher monthly amount. And to the extent that there are issues, they can still continue to engage with some. And we will engage. We want to engage. I think those are important issues.
Well, let's go to Sarah and then Kusatu.
Thank you. Yes, through Chair, I just want to thank Treasury for the responses. From FARA, we are aware of the papers already issued, the numerous papers already issued by National Trade Treasury, and we commend you, especially the use on charges and annuities. As was also rightly stated, a big portion of our members in the survey that we conducted indicated that they are comfortable to proceed with implementation of retirement reform in 2016, although the majority indicated that their preference would be for it to be delayed. I think the main point for the request for the delay was really not understanding or then having the benefit of knowing whether these policies align with the Social Security sector. And I mean, we've received that reassurance today. But it's difficult to provide public comments without those underlying policy framework. And I think just my main item, although we do realize and appreciate that the 350 cap wasn't up for debate, it's already been promulgated, I think just from the debate here today and from the Honourable Committee members, I think it is an issue that our members have addressed. And again, the boils back to not necessarily understanding the underlying reasons for the implementation of the 350 cap. Thank you.
There was a question about exactly who you represent. Do you want to answer it?
So the South African Rewards Association is a professional body. It's mostly remuneration HR professionals from corporate companies, both representing the private sector and the state and representing members like they would be at the end of the decisions taken by this committee.
Okay, thanks Chair. I think we can start with the last Honourable Van Rooyen. Look, in terms of our ambitious thoughts around JALIC 2016, let me say that as a plea to my colleague at head office this morning, that look, we can't just say delay to the committee, we must come with some sort of time frame. Otherwise members will say we're afraid, we must come with something. And look, Honourable Van Rooyen is right, it is an ambitious time frame, but it is contingent upon Treasury meeting the discussion paper on comprehensive social security, so that if that were made available for engagement now, we would be ambitious that over the next 2 months, 3 months, we could find each other. Obviously, there's a political caveat to it, but we wanted to say, look, we're not just delaying for the sake of being obstinate or difficult, but our thing is that have the two together, and we think that we could find each other. We do recognize and appreciate many of the concessions that Treasury has made over the past 2 years from the original position. I think Chair Honourable Van Rooyen is completely right about there hasn't been sufficient consultation at a shop floor level. And that this feeds exactly into the concerns about developing alarmists, that the literal killing of workers. I think our own comments are afraid that in the current climate, just to go to shop floor and say that the implementation come 1st of March, we're in a very difficult phase. So that's kind of our thing. I think Chair, maybe it's also unfortunate, but I think between Labour and Treasury, the norm is actually a bad blood, if I can put it that way.
Oh,
yeah? Well, I can't speak for everybody, but I can speak for the person.
I don't think anybody that I can speak for.
I
think
for you. You know, we realize that
anybody says that's
not a cheat. Well, I think, Chair, maybe taking a more easy example to illustrate the point. In March, in the budget speech, the Minister of Finance announced that UAF contributions holiday. Now, Kusato heard about that in the morning of the budget speech. And it really created massive alarm bells, anxiety, anger amongst Kusato's membership and leadership. Well, on the other hand, the objectives of Treasury about not having a surplus sitting there unutilized were legitimate concerns about trying to find ways of putting money back into the economy. Those are legitimate concerns. The point is that this Treasury had re-engaged with us not the morning budget speech, the phone call to the acting chair said, you heard about this thing, are you happy? But rather, October the year before, they said, look, we're concerned about the surplus, how can we just stimulate economic growth? I'm sure we would have been able to find each other easily. I think that is the point of really having meaningful engagement. It doesn't have to be with media statements, where bilateral leaders can engage with an ELEC. But so far, I think we find ourselves not doing that properly, Commissioner. Look, we consider the 11th social security discussion that, like, we've been waiting for years for this thing. There's been a standing task team set up in NEDLAC, and the delay has been, again, not having the paper. All the government is the one decision thing. We've never deployed its official statement. We've all given our name. We're waiting for government to say who was the agenda in the party. The other issue about delays in NEDLAC, Comrade Chair, which is important, and I'm glad Comrade Van Rijn raises. You know, time various government departments come to NEDLAC, not just Treasury, but Public Works, Rural Development, and they appeal to NEDLAC, please, you must fast track this bill, it's very urgent, it must pass by tomorrow in Parliament. NEDLAC rushes through a bill in 6 weeks or something. Those bills then connect to the department and sit there for 2 years. So we will talk about the UAS, for example. The Department of Labor came to NEDLAC in 2013, rushed the UAS bill, a good bill, which is going to expand access to the UAS from 8 months benefits to 12 months, expand access to maternity leave benefits, so it's win-win. Even business supported it. For 2 years, the Department of Labor didn't table it at Parliament. When they tabled it, they forgot to get a set of other state law advisors. They had to go back. They forgot to present it and become a gazette. They had to go back. So, Chair, often the delays are not from the party being difficult, but from government departments not being well coordinated, if I can put it that way. Not Treasury in this case, but other departments. In fact, Chair, we had to spend this year harassing that Department of Labor to table that UAS bill here in Parliament. They thought they came in that lack in March that the bill is in Parliament. It only tabled properly in Parliament in October this year. So those are the kind of things which make it difficult at times for consultative comments, Chair. Look, I think Honourable Tobias is correct about consultation of the decisions, and I really, as consultative, we don't be able to get a fresh mandate from our Congress in 2 weeks' time. But I can say that really most of our senior members are quite up in arms. Some of it for legitimate reasons, some of it just because of the fear of the nationalization of retirement status, if one can put it that way, in the wrong term. Well, I think, Chair, look, we would want to support Honourable Pinky, sorry, let me get the surname correctly. Kekana, thank you. We really want to see Treasury, Department of Social Development, sitting with us in one room, because we get two different messages, and really would want to see all of us working together. Social Development Department says they're delaying in releasing the records of Treasury. They're supporting our position. So we don't want to be their shops too. They must come.
Supporting your position that this thing be deferred.
Yes. And they want...
Chair, do you not regret? And I say after that is... Criminal people, fat you people.
What does that mean?
Be shy.
I got a meat one gun, but I mean, you know, you can put your as well. I won't understand on something, but I mean, any language you want. So you're saying that's a political case. I will speak to the minister in the House.
Sure, yeah, look, I mean, I won't reveal too much or speak too much on their behalf. But from what I've been told, she has similar concerns, but she's best placed to speak on her own. But I think the point is really want to find all of us together in one room, so all come to the same kind of conclusion, a win-win approach ideally. I think Honourable Kikana, would you share the concerns about workers at lining? And look, we've had our senior staff, for example, people with teachers or public servants not affected by the reform. Don't resign. How do you sacrifice a safe job every month because of what you hear in the streets? Again, we often are problems losing credibility to them because it's, you're controlling the government, the alliance, you know, the normal kind of things that are thrown at construction. You have truth, trust, and governance, all those kind of slogans. I think I've been kind of concluding and responding to this question. Look, I think we have to look at Comrade Momo saying, let's have more time to engage. And for us here, we agree the issue really is around the levels and the detail. We would really need that we find ways to look at vulnerable workers. The issue of means test, I think we can see how the means test has blown up with NEDLAC over the past few months. I think to conclude, look, our real key issue really is it's difficult for us to tell the senior workers in the absence of a comprehensive social security, this is the one saving option. And I think as Honourable Van Rijn is saying, or even as Tobias, if you They'll say you're speaking fancy English to them when they want to hear the anthem of Afrikaans, you know. They will come with very fancy things and they just want to know that their things are left untouched, etc. But we would cliche, or we know we're kind of against a brick wall because of the delay, but for time to engage, we'll treasure with yourself and also get a fresh mandate from our Congress in 2 weeks' time. Thanks, Jacob.
Basically, I just wanted to raise some issues. I'm not sure how we manage this process here in Swat, but the one thing that strikes me is, to be fair to National Treasury Consultant Matthew, this issue has been on the agenda for several years now. Okay. Obvious question. Let us start with this. Although we are in an alliance as the majority party with the country, it's not our share abroad. Ideological perspective with you. We have to judge you by the same standards as anybody else, business, NGOs, whoever. The quality of your argument that is partly what will shape the outcome, presumably, of the views of the majority in this party, or, I mean, this committee, or all of us. And my own view is that, look, I don't know where this paper is. But there's no guarantee that this paper will emerge over the next 3-4 months. You refer to an NGC decision, but we're already in November. I can't see that that paper will be finalized by the end of this month, end of this year. So let's start with this. The argument used about 2016 is not credible, Matthew, with due respect. Okay? And you also seem to suggest that. And I think theirs is right. I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I'm saying it's not credible. There's a big difference between the two, right? Secondly, I think the issue for the committee, politics is not about just who is technically right and technically wrong. It's also substantially about perceptions out there. So you can have the best policies in the world for the people you seek to address, and those very people can turn against you. So one of the things women have to think about is how do you find the right balances between taking the right decisions, in this case it seems, in the interest of a constituency, which constituency may not fully understand that and react to it in all sorts of ways. This was brought provocatively when you refer to the death of the NUM organizer, potential candidate of this parliament, sorry. So I think women need to apply our mind to that. But on the other hand, what is leadership about? If not to take decisions and persuade. And if this alliance is actually functioning, it could mean at times that one or other sector of this alliance has to say, okay, we don't like what's happening. But we understand that if we go ahead and do the consequences will be that our constituency will be up in arms, and we together go out and educate people about this. The other thing that I think members should also think about is there is a fair case to be made by National Treasury, surely, unless I'm misunderstanding, that nothing much is going to happen. Unless you are misleading us, you know. I'm not saying deliberately, or you don't understand the consequences of what you're doing fully, then it means there is some room for engagement. I do buy that there's a distinction, but there is some room for engagement. But the parameters within that engagement, parameters of that engagement have been significantly narrowed. The issue members need to apply themselves to is, are the parameters for any engagement so narrow that it's not worth consulting to say, okay, we'll buy in for this. We'll buy into this. That's another thing members need to apply their mind to. You know, your consulting demand, I don't think you're right. It's the way you word things, Congress. You're living now 21 years beyond the democracy, right? And the way you pitch things, you can do the sort of thing maybe in a, even an alliance meet, you can't do these sort of things anymore, given the configuration of where alliance is today, unlike 20 years ago. Like, you know, you're 2 years on page one, I made some notes here, we need more time. But we had a reasonable amount of time. And I think I can't share with this committee because I can't prove some of these things. But, you know, I just go by my instinct, where I don't have enough evidence. I go by my instinct. I know how the alliance works. I've been part of this thing for a long time. And when somebody tells me something, They don't give me the evidence. I have to go by my own experience, okay? All of us do that. Politics also about instinct. And instinct, and it's incredible some of the things that I said about Kosatu degree of cooperation or engagement around these issues. We understand the objective and subjective broad challenges Kosatu's got at the moment. The last 2 years have been extremely challenging for you. But the question is, what would be different if we gave more time? That's not very clear to me, but you might want to respond to that, right? Yeah, there are many answers I could say. I'm interested to hear DSV's position. I'll check with it. But this is gone through cabinet, right? These bills, and cabinet agreed by a majority. So presumably all ministers, even if it's in cabinet, are bound by cabinet decision-making. You understand that? Well, I know. Is there something different about this bill? Did you allow ministers to take a different position or what? Sorry?
Yeah, the test laws, they go through a different process because you will appreciate the laws are so it doesn't go through like the normal bills. What happens is it goes, the text proposals get sort of adopted when cabinet adopts the budget. Okay, so in effect the proposals are adopted, but just on this matter the minister actually raised it again. Look, the papers, the initial papers were taken to cabinet a few years ago, and the minister raised this matter again last week at cabinet. So in fact, the cabinet view is or his briefing of that is published. Yes.
All right. I think that we are taking no decision. No, I think we're taking no decision. We need some time. I think we've exhausted this now. We'll give you a, if any of you stakeholders first want to say something, we'll start with the members, stakeholders, and national. We need now as a study group and as a committee, and as committees, to apply our minds to this. Right? We've got a joint study group, a full study group today. And I think we must discuss. We cannot, for various reasons, delay the thing. The study group has to take positions, I'm sure, and we have to come back in the next 24, 48 hours. With our positions on this issue. So, you know, be clear that we're not taking any decisions on this. The second thing I need to alert to Musani, too, because there's nobody else in Musani, we're still waiting for our content, but is that the other submissions where people have not made verbal input, we have to summarize them. And the member has to apply their mind to it. The fact that people do not turn up here does not mean that they carry any less weight. There's no rule for sentence. I'm just saying about my 2009 era. If anything I say that has changed the last 5 years, because I've been out of loop here, tell me. But as far as I know, every hearing has the same weight. Every submission is the same, whether people come orally or make little submissions. So we will have to summarize the discussions yesterday. I haven't gone through them personally now. But they are very brief in number and brief in pages. So, Dhuvasai, can you do a summary of this, right? And then thirdly, I would like the National Treasury to reply to the submissions that are in written form, preferably by 10 o'clock tomorrow, okay? So that we see what is saying in reply to that. So the members can look at what Dumasan is saying, look at what you're saying, and then look at the other submissions. So one of the things we will have to do, because we have very few submissions, I must tell you, on the FICA bill. Now, depending on the administrative support I get, and I'm going to contact members to help, because I can't do this all on my own. We all support the right to strike. Whether we agree with the specific demands or not, it's neither here nor there. We support the right to strike. Right? So we will have to all play a part and be patient. We will try to do what we can within the constraints of no administrative support or limited administrative support. So on the matter of taking decisions, let's be clear, colleagues, we are taking no decisions here. So let's start with help.
Mr. Chairman.
And we have to look at things clause by clause. I don't know if we're going to find time. This is an uncontested part there. Clause by clause.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'll wait because my question about the sole proprietor versus partnership wasn't answered, but you've also asked the National Treasury to give written response to the submission.
Yeah, no problem. You have the right to reply quickly. Yeah.
Thanks, Noble Mayor. We can discuss this
with SAICA, from our initial viewpoint, I mean, they say sole proprietors could not benefit from this. In the legislation we have that you can do the deduction up to the greater taxable income or remuneration, and a sole proprietor would have taxable income, so a sole proprietor would be able to claim a deduction in this regime. The reason we have the special dispensation for the partnerships is that the taxable income of a partnership could all get put together, but now you need to split it out to be actually applicable to the specific partner to then get the remuneration or the taxable income for that specific partner. That's why there's this dispensation for the partnership, because it's more complicated when they're all together. I mean, we can discuss it with them, but you know, we think it's covered as it is. Is that correct, Frank? So I think that covers that. I mean, on the other point, on the 350,000 cap, can I? I mean, the 350,000 cap in budget 2011, we put the figure out to 200,000. And then in budget 2012, we put the figure out as 250,000 for people below 45 and 300,000 for people above 45. And then now we've got another higher level of 350,000. And it has been increased over the years since this proposal came in. And like the medical tax credits, it really it would be more equitable to do this. And there's very generous provisions where if you're above the limit, you can roll it over to the next year. And even when you retire, and there's still amounts that are above the limit, you get that on tax-free in retirement. So it's actually just the timing of the tax burden rather than double taxation or anything.
I think the issue of inflation increase is, you know, we accept that. Whether you do it every year, you do it every 3 years. And I think, as we said, this is a number that we could look at certainly leading up to the budget here.
Right, now the stakeholder very quickly, start with that. Cisa is going to say, because there are five points to the sharing.
I think all your points are taken now related to our leadership, etc. I think just that we have one question about what would change. Well, I think a smaller, well, easier one is that we'll have a Congress in 2 weeks' time. Well, literally what this could give us a renewed mandate or a fresh mandate. I think the other one is that we're still hopeful that a comprehensive paper would be released any day now. We have to live in eternal hope. Thanks, Shepard.
Thank you very much. We now move very quickly to the report. The written report is here. Okay, we can wait for him very quickly. In the meanwhile, let me alert you to a few things. One is, on the peak of until the deadline, we only got 3 requests for oral submissions. So we will hear them. You will reply. They will reply. You will reply. Done. I don't think that will take long. Then we can come back to this bill. And we will, the subcommittee met. It delivered the report. You'll see it there. We, in terms of the rules, norms of subcommittees, we're not going to go through every clause again. The subcommittee, I was there at every meeting of subcommittee. We went through it. But formally, we have to table it. So we will deal firstly with the uncontested parts, with the parts outside this issue of what we've discussed today. Right? Then we will come back. On Friday, we're sitting with the Twin Peaks bill. So we will come back and hopefully, if all goes well, vote on Friday on this bill. We have to, because it's in the House next week. Is that right, Cindy? When is it in the House now? That's next Tuesday. So we have to vote on Friday, otherwise we cannot have postponed, and that will unravel the whole process. Okay, so let me just think this quickly, because I think that's important.
Where are you
going, Dad? Yes. Oh, right. Have you got copies of the report? It's a state subcommittee. I see something here. I like the way you see it. Yeah, are there copies there? Can you distribute them to Bhutani, please? I saw an earlier version of that. Where is mine?
Sorry, Chair. I think Honourable Sandran wanted to speak to them first, because I think he wanted to distribute the first discussion.
All right, can you start reading? So what do we do now? Can you start taking us through the report? You were there all the time, yes? I mean,
Yes, he's coming, yes. We need your report, please. Now, there's some confusion. I'm going to distribute the written thing or not. Is that an accurate reflection, the written one? Is the written version, is that an accurate reflection of, have you checked it and everything, right? So we can distribute it.
Yeah.
Okay, so which one do we distribute? This is two reports.
Both of them.
Okay, just distribute them. Can you stop taking us through this?
Sir, thank you very much. The first report, of course, we have already made our submission to the committee on the outcome of this exercise. I must just indicate that the only part that has been enhanced on this report is the part on research and development incentives. As you are all aware, that there was some engagement with one of the people who made submissions. Now we had to act on that development because ultimately we engaged the person and there was an undertaking that he will be further engaged on the outcome of the task team that has been established by the Minister of Science and Technology to deal with this matter. And quite interestingly for members to notice the fact that the same member was actually included in the task team of the list. So that would say, to a larger extent, I mean, his concerns or maybe his inputs will be properly accommodated in this process. But this report, the outcome of this report, as members still remember, the areas that were covered in this report ranges from the issue on the section 16, but also that is except the research and development issues. There was also an issue on the provision of the Tax Administration Act, which were covered in the first report submitted to the committee. And those are the three issues that came in the first assignment. And Chair, we spoke to a very extensively to this in our last meeting. I don't know if you want me to repeat the subcommittee position here. Yeah. And then subsequently we were also assigned to look into this new amendment that was, of course, submitted by the Minister for the Cocoa Committee consideration. What is key here is that the member should know the nature of the amendments referred to the committee were not necessarily your technical corrections that usually is set, provided for by the money bills, but they were far beyond, I mean, the technical corrections. And usually technical corrections are dealt with in Section 40. But the referred amendments are accordingly provided for in the Section 11, which deal with passing the renewal bills. And of course, the relevant subsections of this section, subsection 5, provides for a process of amending the fiscal framework. And it calls, of course, for the committee to ensure that all these subsections are complied to, ranging from ensuring that there is an appropriate balance between revenue and expenditure as well as borrowing, to taking into account all public revenue and expenditure, including extra-budgetary funds and contingency liabilities. But also subsection 3 of section 11 provides further rules that will make sure that the committee adhere or maybe ensure that total amount of revenue rate is consistent with the approved fiscal framework and division of revenue base, but also taking into account the principle of equity, efficiency, certainty, and ease of collection. But in our engagement also as a subcommittee, we also took note of the fact that the Standing Committee on Finance should submit to the House a motivation for this amendment, just to ensure that these amendments are complying to Section 8, Subsection 5, as well as Section 11, Subsection 3, and also comment from the Minister of Finance on any proposed amendment. But Section 11 requires that there should be consultation with executives and obviously when there is a need, we should conduct public hearings. Now, the term of reference of our committee members, we were just to focus on this exercise, going through it plot by plot, as we consider the two test logs, but also we expected to establish evidence on whether the amendments comply with Section 8, Subsection 5, and Section 11, Subsection 3 of the money bills. So we met on the 4th of November and the 5th of November, respectively, and considered decided, of course, by the terms of reference. Clause by clause, as a committee, we went through this, and taking time, we were assisted by National Treasury, and we did a robust clause-by-clause exercise, and agreed that the process should be subjected to this meeting. And as to the second term of reference, compliance to the money bills provision, the subcommittee agreed that National Treasury should provide compliance assistance, and this was done because now we wanted to attach National Treasury opinion on this, which was a very positive opinion, but now all the information are affected by this labor plan, because then the report will indicate the compliance, and the subcommittee certifies itself that this process really complies. And also, Advocate Jenkins also provided notes and advice on the process for amending the tax laws in terms of the money base, and this was done. The report was also to be attached, but it was also a positive report. And as a subcommittee, we further resolved on the following areas. The Standing Committee of Finance should invite public comments on the proposed amendments to taxation laws. And I think we are here today as a result of that resolution. And then secondly, because of the chairperson should engage the programming committee, remember, Edna, tabling was scheduled for a certain date, but after the engagement then with the programming committee, this was rescheduled. So the tabling will be on the 17th of this month. And lastly, we then resolved that the standing committee should submit a report to the House motivating amendments in terms of Section 8, Subsection 5, and Section 11, Subsection 3. And of course, comment from the Minister of Finance on any proposed amendment. So here we noted that the Secretary will then table that report to this meeting. I hope the report is not affected by this labor fact that we are encountering today. So in a nutshell, this report is not in the format of the NHC because it was prepared by myself, so we still need to get it in the right format. But all in all, this is how far the committee moves in terms of executing it, the subcommittee moves in terms of executing its mandate. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Any members of the subcommittee want to add?
No, that's fine. I was there. In fact, it's a very accurate reflection. Just to say that this doesn't get put into the ATC. We draw on this and make it the report of the committee, so we'll use this up here. Right. Any questions, comments?
No.
So the procedure is clear. We've agreed. I'm not going to cover it again except the national one.
is that we urge that people parties decide their positions if possible by tomorrow. Failing which, it's fine. We'll leave this area out. We'll go through clause by clause tomorrow. It's going to be very fast because the subcommittee serves it. So it'll be very quick that part. Okay? It'll be done immediately after the fee cutoff. Now, there's a chance we could say Bomo in future, which is if they have space and time, let's move on to the 20th floor. No, tomorrow. I'm not sure. Then Friday is the 20th floor. We start, those members who are not here, decisions have been taken. On Friday we start at 9, so that we can finish by 12:30 and people can get their bikes. Yeah. Not 10. The other days we stick with 10 unless you're here otherwise.
Jim, I know we discussed it, but just please remind me, will we have the practically, we'll be looking at a document that still has all the retirement annuity or retirement reform stuff in this. It's the bill as it stands. It's not, we've got to amend it. We won't be getting an amended bill with the stuff.
Well, we discussed it in this committee before you came as well. We deal with the final version of the bill. But that's an internal matter. I don't know how we're going to do it without administrative support. That's another problem. If this crisis hits, how are we going to do that? Well, look, I will sort that out with Frank Jenkins and people who were affected who deal with this matter. We simplify things. We actually have the version of the bill. The original version of the bill with all the amendments in that book. So it makes it easier for you to tell what you've done. And we also have the version that Parliament gives us, which is we discuss this matter, but it simplifies. Okay. Right. Is there anything else? No? Good, thank you. Yes.
So tomorrow we'll potentially then only be dealing obviously with the amendments to this. This is the table bill, right? Now although you may still have to go through all these clauses, but you'll be essentially spending most time on this document which says what's changing here.
Okay.
And all that just because you know, we were asked like to deal with the criteria. We actually brought it today. We could give
No, we need that. We can't do
it. Give it to you now or we could give it to you tomorrow.
No, give it to us, we will try to get it printed. Can you email it to us?
Printed.
Oh. You got copy for all
copy.
Go and give it to us. Yes, there was an administrative problem. Yeah.
It's the slide that we went through, just put it in.
I thought there's no copy. No, of here we are. Can members look at this and comment when we come in here? The first item on the agenda when we look at the bills, right? But the subcommittee has visited, has asked for this, and we'll give it to members now to look at, and you've got up to tomorrow morning here on 11:30 or so to look at this. Right? Okay. Is there anything else? No. ANC members, please note one. There is a caucus right now taking place in the old assembly chamber. And two is we have a study group meeting, very important, because we have to finalize our positions on these things we can this afternoon. That's immediately after the House rises, which I understand is around 5 p.m., is that right? If the House rises at 5 p.m., sometime a bit later. Okay, thank you all, bye. Okay.